Miss me?
What are you doing?
Oh, I was just thinking about leaving this place. It's been swell, but swelling's gone down. What do you reckon? We go to New York, see Cats.
That was by Richard's request.
It was.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory. Thank you for joining us today. This is episode number 16 of our brand new film cast from Prismatic Tsunami. My name is Eric. I'm going to go ahead and introduce the panel and get us started on a high note today. How you doing? We got Rich in the show, in the panel. We got Rich over here.
Yay. Hey, okay. Hey.
Got Vanessa.
Hello, hello.
Jason.
Hola.
And the kid.
Hello, party people.
Who I swear is actually here in the flesh and not just in spirit, but he does look a little worn over today. I think he was up until about Dark 30 finishing the movie. How's everybody doing?
No, it was definitely
what I did. It
was definitely bright by then.
9 o'clock this morning.
Oh, bright 30. Wow. Okay, so this is a ought to be a fun episode. We had a switch. I want to go ahead and warn everybody that watched the wrong movie. We'll be covering all your right. movie at another time. We were going to do Red this week, and I think it was Hulu that had it, and they dropped it right after we decided we were going
on
to do it.
Monday.
And so we were like, oh, well, shit, that means we need to find something different. So we picked another movie, and then, of course, Prime put Red up like 2 days later. So we will get back to that one very soon. It'll be a couple weeks, I think, but be counting on that. It'll be there. This week, we're doing Tank Girl. Released March 31st of 1995 at a whopping number 10 in the box office with $2 million on release. I went ahead and pulled, because this was so good, I went ahead and pulled the top 10 movies for that weekend, because the number one movie for that weekend was Tommy Boy, which premiered, and I shit you not, at $8 million for the weekend. So this wasn't actually that far behind. And even in 95, I'm pretty sure that was on the low side for a March. Outbreak was out. It wasn't its first week. It came in at number two. Then Major Pain, Dolores Claiborne, Forrest Gump was still in the theater after I don't know how many weeks at that point.
12.
Thank you. Muriel's Wedding beat this one. Circle of Friends, never even heard of it. Man
that was
of the
Chris
House.
Chris O'Donnell, Mini Driver.
Oh, Circle of Friends?
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
It was one of the British movies.
I believe you. Man of the House and Pulp Fiction was still in the theater and came in at number 9. So Tank Girl lost to all of that on its opening weekend.
I'm not surprised.
Neither am I.
Now, did any of you watch the trailer?
No.
That
no.
could have a lot to do with it. Number
is it that bad?
Well, you saw the movie. That's rated true. R, runtime of 1 hour and 44 minutes. A girl is among the few survivors of a dystopian Earth riding a war tank. She fights against the tyranny of a mega corporation that dominates the remaining potable water supply of the planet. Directed by
that's in a nutshell there.
It's pretty good. Directed by Rachel Talalay, who's directing credits prior to this included primarily Freddy's Dead, the sixth Nightmare on Elm Street movie, which I think she helped write. And she did series of all to some of the Nightmare on Elm Street stuff as a writer. That was in 91. After this, she did a ton of television. She's won a lot of awards. This was obviously very early in her career. Written by Teddy Serafian. Only thing on his hit list prior to this was the critically acclaimed fan favorite Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
That explains so much.
Unarguably the worst of the franchise. And of the comic strip, credit went to Alan Martin and Jamie Hewlett, who did the comic strip that this is based on. And Jamie Hewlett, Alan Martin has, like, his IMDb entry is blank. It's a page that just has his name and nothing else on the, in fact, the internet tried. It was still sitting there doing a circle thing for a while. Jamie Hewlett is one of the three people in the Gorillas. So Jamie's entire production list is all produced
that
a ton of videos.
Music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Graham Revell did the actual score. And actually, Revell's good. The Crow, The Saint, the sequel to The Crow, which, I mean, the music was still good. From Dusk Till Dawn, The Craft, Strange Days. I see a pattern. That was all around like that 94 to 96 area right there. Those were all movies and stuff from right around this. give you kind of an idea. But we didn't hear a lot of the score. It was there, but mostly this was a lot of rock and electronic music and stuff, which was fine. It was great.
Yeah.
Starring Miss Lori Petty. Now, at this point, Lori had done Point Break in 91. She had A League of Their Own in 92. She was in the spectacular Pauly Shore film In the Army Now in 94. And that was it. And then this was pretty much the peak of her career. What's that?
Free Willy.
Free Willy, yeah. Yeah, she did Free Willy. In fact, she did appear in Free Willy 2 because of this movie. So she had to kind of give up that one because she signed off for this. But this literally was a movie where she looked at the script and looked at the comic strip and went, that's me. And she did embody the character extraordinarily well, from what I can tell. She has made a name for herself now in Orange is the New Black, and I understand she's really well, but I've never watched the show. One of those that's on my low kind of radar hit list at some point because it was so popular. Ice-T, and again, here we go again. I mean, the man was a rapper, not so much an actor, right?
At the time,
and you can tell.
He was just starting to get there.
New Jack City came out in 91, and that was his first theatrical role, where he was, I think, a cop. Was he an undercover cop in New Jack City, I think? Johnny Mnemonic was the same year as this. And then, I mean, he's made a name for himself over 20 years in SVU, Law and Order, which I've never actually watched much of that, but I've seen him in it. So there you go.
If you've seen one episode, you've seen them all.
I kind of felt that way.
And he plays a similar character. So.
The neat thing about Law and Order is that you say it and you can immediately hear the music in your head. Yeah, I mean, it's there.
I've never seen that show, but are you saying he's a kangaroo in that one too?
I think so.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said.
Okay.
See, Naomi Watts. Well, did you have another comment there, Jay?
No.
Naomi.
That was a very expressive no.
Want to hear about that one later, okay? make a bookmark. Naomi Watts. This was, of course, 6 years before Mulholland Drive. This was one of her first films. It might have been her first, quote-unquote, feature film. I put that in quotes for a reason. And, I mean, she was so shy repeatedly when she did this that they had to kind of pull her out of the shot. She was Jet Girl, so it was a very appropriate role, I think, for her. But she, auditioned for it, 9 times and is presumably very, really ashamed of this, this role, this movie, start to her career. But, she was later appeared in The Ring in Mulholland Drive. And that was before she was offered the role of Ann Dara in King Kong, reprising the Faye Ray's role in the Peter Jackson 2005 film. She went on to do a bunch of stuff. Those were the big ones other than the villain. We'll get to him in a second.
Must we?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, we must.
Oh, yes.
Oh, we must. We must.
Don Harvey played in this. Sergeant Small. I don't know if you guys looked up any of these sideline actors here. Don Harvey's major.
I didn't recognize hardly anybody.
I thought I recognized a lot of people. And it turns out I recognized almost nobody.
Don Harvey was Sergeant Small. He was the guy that
the
creepy guy.
Yeah. His primary contribution to the zeitgeist of geek moviedom is in one of the most extraordinary films, bad films of all time. He was Snickers in Hudson Hawk.
I'm sure can I go home now? At some point.
I expected more reaction. I definitely expected more from that. Reg E. Caffey was DT. He's the guy. He's the poet. And Reg Reginald, he actually is one of those guys who's appeared in a lot of shit over the years. You know, you see him little bit parts at all kinds of places. Before this, right before this, he did Clean Slate in 94, the Dana Carvey film that was so hilarious. He was in The Mask, Jim Carrey. Airheads. He was in one of the radio station guys in Airheads, because I've seen that movie a gazillion times. Those were all the year before this. Seven came out the same year as this, and he was Dr. Santiago in Seven.
Hey, something I've seen. I don't remember him, but Seven.
He always has a great sense of gravitas around him just because he has that voice.
Actually, one of the things I loved about his role in Airheads is that he kind of didn't. He was kind of pissy. You know, in Airheads, he was that guy who was whenever somebody was saying something that he could take the wrong way, he's like, is that because I'm black? You know, he was that guy.
Oh, my.
And he was hilarious. He was so funny.
Why would they do that to Reggie Caffey?
Because he had a great radio voice. So you put him in there and then you subvert the expectations for the character, because none of the radio people in that show were exactly great people. Joe Mantegna being maybe and Joe was like the opposite. He started off as a class act dickhead and became cool. So Rich, you've seen Airheads, haven't you? It's a Brandon Fraser film. Of course you have.
I probably watched it.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
A long time ago.
Sorry. It's a rock and roll.
I got tired of him quick.
It's a rock and roll film and a radio film. So it's like, I guess it's right there in my wheelhouse. Subgirl was Ann Cusack, one of the Cusack siblings, not the one you know, not one of the two that you know.
Not one of the J Cusacks.
Subgirl was the one with the crazy red hair who like had the shop, the workshop that they redid the garage. Tank and stuff in, the garage. Yeah.
I thought she was called something else.
That's what they called her in the credits.
Water Lady or some shit.
And frankly, that one scene,
I was close.
That was all she ended up in the final, but they filmed a bunch with her. She was supposed to be an important character in the story.
Supposed to be Courtney Love.
Yeah. I saw that too.
And then her husband killed himself.
Don't do that in quotes, man.
They won't see the quotes on the actual podcast.
Oh, they heard them. But Ann Cusack, it's cool to see her in places. She had like bit parts around the same time, Multiplicity, My Fellow Americans, Gross Point Blank, of course, with both of her siblings. Because if John and Joan are going to do a movie together, they may as well get their whole family involved. And most recently, we've seen her as Starlight's mom in The Boys.
That's her?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. She's not as young as she used to be. And
none of us are.
Mr. Malcolm McDowell.
Who's amazing in everything he does.
Holy crap. Now, I'm sure Lori Petty had a good time with this film. It was probably one of the highlights of her career, and it was pretty early in her career. Malcolm McDowell, I mean, the man has 271 acting credits on IMDb, going all the way back to 1964 when he was 21 years old. And have you ever looked up a picture of young Malcolm McDowell? It's eerie. If you haven't.
He looks almost exactly like old Malcolm McDowell. Yeah,
only not old. And it's freaking weird because that face doesn't quite work without the old. This was right after Star Trek Generations. He played Sarn in Generations, which was a really great role as well. He did Milk Money the year before as well. Malcolm McDowell, man, he loved doing this movie. He enjoyed the shit out of this character.
It's funny because my first comment upon recognizing who he was, how did he end up in this movie?
Yeah. Apparently, the production company, MGM, had asked for a short list of great acting talent for this film because they had really high hopes. And the company had actually just put a list together, and they put Malcolm McDowell on there without ever thinking they'd actually call him. So he was kind of like, are you kidding? But man,
according to some trivia I read, he had just finished Star Trek and he had done a few other serious things recently that he felt were serious. And he's like, I want to do something silly. And
this is silly.
Hank Urill fell in his lap and he's like, okay, this is what I shall do next.
We'd like you to play a character with a holographic head.
That was kind of awesome.
And a cybernetic arm.
Yeah. What Jason, Jason called him Dr.
Cybernetic
Claw.
Arm, I'm in.
I loved it.
And dehydrated people after making them walk across glass barefoot.
What a great introduction.
And then walks across barefoot glass himself.
Barefoot glass? Because he's perfect a badass. Glass.
Yes.
You get the idea.
Yes.
Box office, $25 million budget estimated. Made $2 million its opening weekend, grossed $4 million worldwide.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Tank Girl was a runaway hit for MGM or anybody. So there you have it.
Disappointing.
Tank Girl. Gosh. Who wants to start?
I will tell you, my first thing I wrote down was before I even started the movie. And I said, I remember liking it. I used to like a lot of adventure films, but now I'm not certain looking back how much I liked the film because it was good or because it was supposed to like. Then I did press play and I liked it.
Yeah.
I think I liked it better now than when I watched it originally. But I'll tell you, right from the get-go, like just at the very start, they come in with the driving guitars and the visually punching details with that comic vibe just to set the tone
perfectly. The entire opening, yeah.
And the tone is completely locked down when at just 1 minute into the film, naked drawn boobs are on the screen. You know what you're in for at this point.
No.
Yeah?
No, you still don't know.
Heavy metal vibe. No, you're there.
You really don't.
And it's going to be there. The whole edge is there.
I do get what you're saying, though. I felt very similarly about that kind of anticipation. It had been a while. It had been long enough that I remembered what the movie was about. I remembered the basic story pretty well. But I think I was commenting on this to Jason earlier. We were like, oh, we got to stop talking about this. Save it for the show. But I remembered what the movie was, what the story was about. But the story, knowing the story, remembering kind of the tone of the movie and remembering the story, tells you fucking nothing about nothing. This film.
The story is the least important thing in this movie.
It's like
the journey is
that
the
didn't matter.
You hit the nail on the head right there. The story is the
least important thing
in this movie.
I think there's no hiding that fact either. I don't think they went into it going, we're going to fool people on that score.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of trivia on that side that I'll talk about later.
Okay. Cool.
I went so back looking and looked forward this to up, that. Especially while watching live tweets about it, because there were a lot of things I'm like, oh, that's explained if you know the origin of this story. See, this was taken from a graphic novel written in 1988. It's a British comic book, and the setting wasn't set in the Bay Area. It was set in Australia.
Oh, wow. That makes so much sense, doesn't it?
And the whole thing revolved around a whole bunch of British pop culture because it was for a British audience. And then when you try to translate that to an American film, they made some really weird choices that just made things make less sense than they should have. But yeah, if it was still set in Australia, 90% of this film would have made more sense.
Wasn't it set in Australia?
No. No, they started out in the Bay Area. I thought they started out in the Bay Area.
Well, there was that one scene that showed what looked like might have been the Golden Gate Bridge.
That, yes, with all the water out of the bay.
But I thought that was just a, hey, look at the future. I didn't think they stayed there. The fact that they had kangaroos and everybody talked with Aussie accents, I thought it was blatantly Australia.
Oh.
It felt Australian to be in the movie.
That would have made Kangaroo Man make sense.
Yes, because the whole thing felt like they were staying in America and it was driving me crazy.
And the leader of the kangaroo people went across the bay to New Zealand.
Yeah, that's true. That's
okay. Right. I missed a point because I was having too much. Well, they threw me off by starting at the San Francisco Bay.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing you were. That opening image was San Francisco, wasn't it? At the very beginning?
Or, it really
or
was.
It just looked
yeah.
real similar. So, anyway, yeah, I thought this, but now that you talk about it, it's like, oh, yeah, that very Australian. Now that you mention
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I guess it was. Yeah, but it wasn't clear.
And when he was going through the maps, the cracks in the maps. That was all right. Very...
Well, when you lose all the water, the maps are completely screwed anyway.
Right. But, yeah, it was Australia.
Yeah, that's a thing. There you go.
That's cool. But, yeah, it had a very British tone in the humor.
Now, one of the things that... after I watched the movie, I decided to look more into it because... woof. And apparently, United Artists said, hey, we want to make this movie with you guys. The people wanted to make the comic book people wanted to make the movie. They got a director. They got some actors on board that were interested. And then they shopped it to studios. The first people that they shopped it to was Steven Spielberg. And he said, no, this is too hip for me. And they even made their little production team made a bunch of T-shirts that said too hip for Spielberg.
Too hip for Spielberg.
And then finally, there were a couple studios that said, yes, we would like you to make your movie. And the one that gave them the most money, $25 million, was United Artists. Well, after they filmed and went ever so slightly over budget, the United Artists people kept going, you can't show that. You can't do that. No, this doesn't. No, 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 no. And they ended up cutting the movie to the point where the people involved no longer recognized it and were no longer happy with it. And then it bombed in the box office for not making sense because all of the plot got cut out.
There was a plot?
There was a plot.
Well,
somewhere on the cutting room floor was a plot.
The plot.
Right.
Apparently, right, like the scene in the freezer was originally like a 10-minute scene with her and him having conversation instead of a 1-minute scene. But they didn't like it because Lori Petty was too ugly.
I do remember actually pulling...
Did they look at her the rest of the movie? Because it wasn't a good look.
At least they left the floor show.
I thought she was beautiful.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, about that.
Did you see the hairstyle? Because that one was a bad one.
Well, it was
she
comic
could go
book
to
along.
The stylist and have it cut and it fit the comic book drawing.
I did find trivia that said that the director mentioned that there's about an hour of footage that was cut out, and some of the deleted scenes, in addition to that one you just mentioned, in the freezer. Some of the deleted stuff included the Let's Do It singing and dancing scene was longer, if you can believe it.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. That would have been awesome. Random as shit.
Please, everybody likes to sing along, especially the British public.
Don't get me wrong. I liked that part. It just seemed really fucking random.
It was strange. I mean, I was not in the right headspace for it last night when it got to that part. I was watching this like, I remember this.
Are you saying there was something in this movie that didn't seem just completely random?
Well...
No, all of it was random.
Randomer.
In deference to the stuff that Jason was talking about, though, some of the stuff they cut out, there was a scene where Rebecca was getting stoned in a room while listening to some music and talking with her first boyfriend, Richard. You might remember him. He got shot all to hell in the opening sequence. The scene was cut by MGM, not because of the drug use, but because it showed a huge dildo collection that she had in her room.
Because that totally doesn't fit the vibe of the rest of the movie.
Right. There was dialogue between Kesley and Rebecca when they first met that was slightly different. Apparently, MGM made the director use the TV version of one line of dialogue. If you want to torture me, spank me, which was originally fuck me, got changed to lick me. Interesting bit there. I think I captured that line too. Subgirls.
I know that's better.
So, I don't know. Actually, it's a pretty good line, either way. Subgirl's character had a bigger role in the original script. I mentioned that earlier. She was shortened in post-production, turned into a cameo. There was a scene which showed her building the sand submarine that she used in the original ending when she arrived at Water and Power and helped them and free the prisoners. So,
which finally explains her name.
Right. Not just that, but the whole thing, like, in my garage makes a lot more sense if you know that she was, like, tinkering and building stuff.
Right.
The... I gotta talk about this one. There was a scene that MGM insisted on cutting of Tank Girl and her kangaroo boyfriend, Booga, reclining after sex despite spending $5,000 on a prosthetic penis for the kangaroo guy.
Fabulous.
Wow. Well, you can't shortchange that type of thing.
I can't comment on that.
It's one of the ones that the writers of the comic book said that it was fantastic. Why did they have to cut it? And there was a longer final fight scene between Rebecca and Kesley with more dialogue from both of them. I guess part of that actually was in the trailer of the film. There are parts of some of the deleted stuff that ended up in the trailers that weren't in the movie. But that's not necessarily really uncommon in making trailers, since it's often before final cuts are done. So it happens. And there was other stuff, but most of it was even more boring than that. Rebecca did wear, Rebecca Tank Girl, wear 18 different outfits and hairstyles throughout the film.
Sometimes two or three of them within 10 seconds of each other.
Sometimes within seconds of each other.
I do have to say that I thought the kangaroo man effects were incredible. I was really impressed, although the first time they appeared on screen, I was like, all right, who got TMNT in my Tank Girl?
Right.
But
yeah, they did a good job with them.
Almost made a comment similar to that.
They were really bizarre, though. I mean, it caught me so off guard, even though I knew they were in there. When I was watching it again last night, it caught me so off guard. I was like, it's not like it feels out of nowhere because of the way the movie is, but here's one of the funny things. I remember from watching the movie, I remember the kangaroo guys, I remember the Rippers as a major part of the movie, and they kind of are. But they don't appear until over an hour into the film.
Yep.
Which kind of threw me. And in fact, Ice-T was the second name in the credits.
Well,
which,
that's because Ice-T.
There's a bit I'd read that was a radio show host that was ribbing him about, you know, the role in Tank Girl. And Ice-T looked at him and said, they paid me $800,000 to do that movie. They shut up. It's like at the time.
One of the Rippers was actually acted by Doug Jones, one of the background ones, and he's been
he's in a ton of things. Yeah. He's been a ton of things, but you don't know what he looks like.
You have no idea what he looks like because he's always in full prosthetics.
Yeah.
Everything. I remember reading at one point that he knows how to hold his breath for an exorbitant amount of time so he can do the prosthetics easier than a lot of people.
And he played like Abe Froman in the Abe Froman. Abe Froman is the sausage king of Chicago. He played Abe in Hellboy. God, that was a Ferris Bueller joke. Did that go right over everybody's head? He played Abe in the Hellboy. Am I saying it right? Hellboy, not Hellman. That's Hellboy. That's a mayonnaise.
Hellboy, yeah.
the first Hellboy movies, the ones with Ron Perlman. Yeah, and he played the fish guy in Shape of Water, interestingly enough, too. He likes working as a fish guy in Del Toro movies, I guess. That's the thing.
I'd say Pan's Labyrinth, he's the thing with the hands.
Mm-hmm. But what I really love is that he is currently on quasi-television in one of the coolest roles on TV right now. Still in full makeup, but he plays Saru on Star Trek Discovery.
Wow.
And he's fantastic. And he has invented so much about, because he plays a Kelpian is what they call them. And they're new to that series. And as a Star Trek race, there was nothing. I mean, they were invented for Discovery. So he's gotten to develop everything about them. And he is so That's good cool. at that stuff. So, I mean, he the way Saru walks and moves and talks and all that stuff is now, I mean, so amazingly cool and unique.
And it's all him.
Yeah. I like Doug Jones. He's awesome.
That's pretty sweet.
Yes.
Let's see.
Now, also talking about the Rippers real quick.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other little bits of trivia I thought was really cool was Stan Winston was the effects team that built the Rippers, and he was most recently going up to that for Terminator and the Aliens and Jurassic Park and a bunch of other really cool things. And they wanted him involved, but they couldn't afford him. And he saw the comics and said, "You want me to make those?" And he cut his price in half so they could afford him.
Nice.
Because he wanted to make the Rippers. And he's still
truly
really proud of the Rippers. And he's got a museum of all of his work. And they're a very prominent feature because he was thrilled with the way they came out when all was said and done.
I was trying to look into the other names on the actors who did the Rippers. And Jeff Kober, I mean, was in there. He's on The Walking Dead, Sons of Anarchy.
Lots of TV work.
Yeah, lots of. Most of these people I didn't recognize. Remember
who played the pervy one?
I lost which one.
There's
it was.
There's the pervy one.
Oh yeah,
which one wasn't
the brainy one?
The blatantly kind of,
too. The brainy one that built the camera and stuff.
Who's kind of into Jet Girl
and on the clip and.
Yeah. Here, let me put that on for you and then pause her all over. Yeah. Let's see. Iggy Pop was in it. Did you guys see him?
Yeah, he was the one that wanted the schoolgirl.
They called him Ratface. I thought that is appropriate.
Wow.
Well done. Good casting.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Iggy I Pop love was the clap.
Man. And James Hong, of course, was the other notable in the cast I noticed, who was the guy that did the prosthetic stuff for what's his name? I just said his name like 2-3 times.
Malcolm McDowell, whatever
character. Yeah, Malcolm McDowell's character, Kesley. Yeah. Yeah, I James Hong is awesome. You know, I mean,
oh yeah,
he's one of those actors. Like, yeah, they didn't. Yeah,
he's almost always that guy.
Yeah, you know, except what was it? Was he David Lopan?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, he was.
That was a great freaking role. Everything else he does is always kind of bit stuff on the side for like American movies and stuff. Like, man, so good.
He's a very, very busy man.
Let's see. So the creators of Tank Girl, of the comic, have since spoken poorly of their experience in creating the film. This touches on somewhat Jason said, I think. They called it a bit of a sore point for them. Hewlett said the script was lousy. Me and Alan kept rewriting it and putting Grange Hill and Benny Hill jokes in. And they obviously weren't getting it. They forgot to film about 10 major scenes, so we had to animate them.
Oh, that explains a thing.
Oh, that was forced. Oh.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it as an animation breakout.
Oh, yeah. A lot of that was budget, too. That was one of the other trivia bits.
Because they animation, were over budget.
It answered more my tweet question.
That makes sense. Yeah, they said it was a horrible experience. I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, but the animation actually kind of helped make the movie at that point because it was obtusely fitting.
It pulled it into the comic.
Yeah. Wow. Way over the top stuff. Way over the top. You guys want to do some clips? I got clips.
Sure.
I did have a couple of comments I made that I thought were interesting to share.
Yeah.
My favorite one was when she first ran into the tank in this story. I wrote down girl meet tank, tank meet girl. And I spelled the second meet with M-E-A-T.
yeah. Check. Here you and, go. Here you go. I got something for that.
How did I miss?
I'm in love.
Yeah.
How did I miss that was Shaft?
Yeah, right?
You missed that?
I missed that. That was Shaft.
That was awesome. And I loved it. He had the water pistol in his office just to represent how decadent and hypocritic he was about the whole water usage thing.
Oh, that was all over the movie.
He had a waterfall to get into his office.
Yeah.
The waterfall almost made sense because it went down into the trough around. He had all the plants and stuff in his office, and that it was probably a recirculatory fountain. And I didn't have as much problem with the waterfall door, but just going, that's going to be wasted.
And I did have the
strip club.
Yeah, it was all water because it was decadent.
And water beds, and
we're reserving it for only those with power and money.
Yeah, but even those with power and money, that's like there being a national food shortage and the people are swimming in lasagna.
They can eat cake, I guess. I don't know.
I do feel like it is a horrible mistake to take anything, and I mean anything in this movie, seriously.
Oh, it is.
I was like, kid knows. When I first met the kid, he was actually pioneering this whole water and power thing, only it was oatmeal and power, and it didn't quite the same hook. People were a little unsure about the value. And once all the oatmeal ran out, man, you were just bawling there for a while.
He was rolling in it for a while.
I really expected the carrot and walnut flavored oatmeal to go over better.
That was kind of a bad choice on your part.
It seemed like just a freebie. I don't know what went wrong.
Well, two of your friends are allergic to carrots and walnuts.
I have friends.
Here's the opening. Nope.
When your only two friends are allergic to carrots and walnuts.
They set the tone real well, I thought, here.
Listen up, because I'm only telling you this once. I'm not bedtime story lady, so pay attention. It's 2033. The world is screwed now. You see, a while ago, this humongous comet came crashing into the Earth. Bam! Total devastation. End of the world as we know it. No celebrities. No cable TV. No water. It hasn't rained in 11 years. Now, 20 people got to squeeze inside the same bathtub. So it ain't all bad.
Those little throwaway comments were some of the best humor in the movie.
They really were.
That was one of the more entertaining bits of exposition since we started Exposition Street.
Yeah, legit. And that's why I like to always capture that. So especially when we have opening narration, because it often does some stage setting, of course.
I'm pretty sure the script wasn't actually meant to tell a story, more as to just tell one-liners through for an hour and a half.
The script wasn't about telling a story. It was about celebrating a character, and there was no hiding that. I mean, she did not take the story seriously. Why should the audience?
Yeah.
And I have to say, I really felt like this entire movie was the video equivalent of punk rock.
Mm.
That explains why I loved it so much.
High energy, low talent, no budget, just completely and pure emotion steamrolling you
from the
beginning to end.
And that explains a lot. Once they started getting popular, they all quit and went home. They want to be sellouts.
Bingo.
Don't think it worked that way. meat, water, and power.
It was foolish not to carry out my order. And it was foolish to walk across a floor full of glass. If I were you, I wouldn't have done it. I would have killed me first. But you lack that courage, don't you, Captain? Come closer.
If I were you, I wouldn't have done it. I would have killed me. Come here. And then he does it again.
Uh-huh. He was demonstrating his point.
As if to prove the point. He was just told, there's a part of me that thinks if I were in that position, I might have done it the first time. Walk, 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 walk. And then when he said, I wouldn't have done it. I would have killed me before I da-da-da-da-da. And then when he said, come here, I go, oh.
It's an option?
No. Bang.
Right?
Exactly.
Which really showed how much he had them broken.
Yeah.
I always love the idea that mastermind villains have such ridiculous shitwads as cronies. Like, the only people that are interested in being their minions have absolutely no willpower whatsoever. Why are you employing these people as your principal people if they're complete goobs?
Because if they employ the people that think, they revolt and take over.
I was going to say that is a point on the evil mastermind list.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's never been one of my talents.
Strangely, I don't think we've ever referenced on this show before.
Well, we're 16 episodes in. It wasn't exactly a high bar.
Fair enough.
You butt smear.
Rebecca? 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 Rebecca!
Got you.
You butt smear. What'd I tell you? Don't say butt smear. It's not becoming. Say asshole or dickwad.
Just establishment stuff.
And about two Rebeccas too many.
Yeah, I
could have been.
I could have cut a couple of those out, actually. Oh, you are talking about
you.
Me.
Yeah.
Let's see. Abandoned hope.
Between Sunday and Monday hangs a day so dark it will devastate. Abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
Look, you want to torture me, spank me, lick me, do it. But if this poetry shit continues, just shoot me now, please.
I loved Malcolm McDowell's delivery in this movie.
It was so classic good. Malcolm McDowell. It
that was, scene yeah. was so uncomfortable.
With the same serious fervor that every single one of every one of his lines is given. He treats it all with the same level of importance, and that's one of the things that makes him amazing. It's like Tommy Lee Jones.
Mm. Only a little more over the top than Tommy Lee Jones, even, man.
Well, it's the fact that all Malcolm McDowell is Malcolm McDowell.
I am all overstated.
Tommy Lee Jones is Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah. It's going to be there.
But I have to see if there's a movie with both.
I was going to say, but if you put the two of them together, you're going to get a very kind of schizophrenic film, I think. I'm just saying. I liked this line. I almost used this as the intro.
This tank, it isn't.
What? Come on, just one little adjective. We'll have a whole sentence here. The tank isn't glad. Sad. Mad. Lonely.
It isn't operational.
I love writing like that. Because it's intelligent. It's ridiculous, and it's intelligent. You guys don't seem impressed.
Her voice was so frustrating through the entire movie.
Oh, it did drive me nuts that she glommed onto an emotion. It just kind of kept rolling with that.
Not a Lori Petty fan. She always sounds like
her voice was shrill. And after 5 minutes of the movie, if I weren't watching it for this, I would have turned it off.
Nice.
Oh, I love her voice.
I guess we can look forward to some really, really revealing thumbs up and thumbs down there, huh?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad I don't have to do it. To the bat tank.
She's lying. What do you know?
Oh, it's a little something I designed. It's a spectrum analyzer which recognizes voice pattern stress modulations. It detects lies.
But I only speak the truth.
Liar.
Oh, all right. I caught it in my fish pond on a stick.
Liar.
All right, all right, all right, all right. They were selling a girl stuff after they had taken her prisoner. I bought it.
What'd they do with the girl?
Oh, it was terrible. They put her to work in town at Liquid Silver.
Come on, Jed. Gotta go get her. To the bat tank!
That storyline was the only one that had any direction at any point in the entire movie.
Yeah, it felt really out of place.
The direction's heading right towards the creeper.
Speaking of which,
yeah,
drop your guns.
Scrape off all her makeup. This might take me a really long time.
Oh my gosh. And that led into the song and dance number, which I did not capture any of that.
Which, okay. Now, so for those who didn't see, the very next thing that happens is she's like, what do you want me to do? Sing. Sing or I cut your hair off. And she starts cutting little bits of hair off. It's like, what do you want me to sing? Just do it. Cole Porter, 1928. It's 2033.
Yeah.
11 years into the apocalypse. I am a Broadway show fanatic. I don't even know all the words to Let's Do It.
I don't want to surmise anything, but I feel like that environment with the girls and the entertainment, it probably did show tune type stuff a lot. So it probably didn't seem a stupid request. In fact, the woman reacted like, oh, no, you know, whatever.
Well, everybody did.
I hate
everybody did. Every man.
Everybody knew the lines.
That's
true.
And then a little bit later, they show because they've been being spied on. They go, what the heck is that?
And the guard behind him was like,
I think it's Cole Porter.
Make it stop.
I loved that line. That's so clever.
All the things. Now, I'm not saying that it wasn't a good song to pick. I'm not saying that it wasn't a great number.
It was played for comedy. It was a great number. It was, but yeah, but the dancing was great. It had
no place. And as soon as she took the gun off of the madam's neck and started being involved in the show, why didn't the bad guys just stop her there? There's so many questions that come with that. And they lose the girl, which was the whole reason they went to this place.
Wait a minute. This is the point of the movie when you start asking about logic.
And once again, I'm forced to say, it's very important that you don't take anything in this entire movie seriously.
Well, I've had other small logic-y issues. Just this, it felt, you know, earlier it was described as feeling random. Random isn't the right word, because everything in the movie, like you said, felt random. It felt out of place. In
they tried to go Bollywood with it.
Yeah, in this random universe, the way that they were acting, to all of the sudden take an Ethel Merman-esque 1928 Cole Porter classic bloop right in the middle.
To be fair, it was the least punk rock part of the entire movie.
I loved the bit where they did the thing that looked like synchronized swimming, but it was in a fountain of like streams of jets of water, right, instead of a pool.
Oh yeah, no, that was awesome too. And this ended up generating Joan Jett's version of Let's Do It, which is just incredible. And I'm very happy it's there. But to be fair, I also enjoy the movie Shock Treatment greatly. And maybe my idea of how things should fit together in a story are a little different.
A little more of a musical.
So you're the guy.
I don't think different is the word I would use.
Was made for me.
Well, no. I knew that there was at least one person that enjoyed Shock Treatment. I didn't realize it was you.
I've seen it about 25 times.
I've seen it 0 times.
If you're listening and you don't know what it is, look it up. It's worth it. Worth looking up.
That giggle's very telling.
Oh my God. Meet the Rippers.
They're spies. They got water and power logos all over.
Yeah, I was thinking that, right? But then I was also thinking that they are water and power.
No.
Why would they come here advertising it?
Check it out. Tattoos. Wonder where else they got them.
I don't think those are tattoos. I mean, like, who would want some alphabet soup? I'd rather have a dragon or something more Aquarian-related, you dig?
All of his dialogue was so much fun to listen to him deliver.
And his voice.
And they all did have a bunch of tattoos.
Yeah, they did. I could have zoomed in on every line Ridge delivered and been happy with the movie at that point, honestly. He was so much fun.
I could have watched an entire movie of the Rippers.
Yeah, the Rippers are cool.
I kind of want an entire movie of the Rippers.
You know,
they were awesome.
Each Ripper's makeup took like 4 hours to put on, and it took like 3 technicians for each of them to work on the articulations during filming. So they didn't use any puppets or digital effects or anything like that. The actor said it was like wearing a couch.
But with modern sensibilities and television levels, you could actually do a series like that and have it actually work now.
Yeah, now it'd be cheaper too.
One guy ran the ears, another guy ran the tail. Mm-hmm.
I guess Ice-T never once complained when somebody asked him why. He replied, better than prison.
Post-Deadpool, this whole movie would have probably have done better with a full cut.
Post-Deadpool, very good point.
Did anyone catch the scenes in which the Rippers had no tails?
I did not pay attention for continuity.
There were scenes where they didn't have tails.
Yeah,
I try not to stare at people's butts. No tails.
Don't look for continuity in this
movie. I thought they were just shoved into the armor.
Yeah, I don't think that. I mean, because they couldn't have accidentally left those out of the costume. Obviously, they were part of the freaking costume. It would have had to be intentional. But giving her realness, I had to catch this.
Delphi to Dolly, be a good little girl and let's get set up over there by the crates. Take off your shirt.
What are you doing here? This is a restricted area.
I know you're not talking to me like this. Obviously, you didn't get the memo.
What memo?
Darling, we are doing a Men of Water and Power calendar.
And I think you would be the perfect supermodel cover.
Why don't I have role players that try that stuff in these in these games? I want a game session where I have somebody try to pull off the most ridiculous, over the top, on the spot con like that, just to get some information or get a peek at something. I think that's great.
Because as a general rule, we think your bad guys are better written.
Well,
okay. I generally avoid that because sometimes you seem to get annoyed by my chaos.
Most of my characters are not very facey. You would need a very facey character for that.
I have some facey characters that can do that.
I think you guys have answered my question. That's fair.
This is what you get for asking.
I did ask.
Although you did,
for me,
you
it's did just the case miss. That
I should have sent in for a clip, but I think you were already done by the time I watched it. When they were trying to vote on what to do with them, to kill them or not, you know, okay, do we kill them? Do we leave them alive? I think we should have crumpets and tea. Ooh, tasty crumpets and tea.
I did think about catching that. I wish I had.
That was good.
Right? Sontees.shop.
In Reg Cathy's beautiful voice. Ooh, tasty. Crumpets and tea.
Are you proud of yourself?
Right.
Fly this rocket right up your what?
Home plate. This is Condor 4. We have pirate interference. Obviously a whimper ploy to confuse you. Now here's the situation. This bird has got no electrical. And in about 2 minutes, we're going to be kissing gravel. So listen to me, you sperm sucker. Either you get off your butt and clear us for landing, or I'm going to fly this rocket right up your socket.
Right up your socket? Is that what she said?
Yes.
Socket.
Socket. Okay. At first, I wasn't that thought that way.
What did you think she said?
That sounded like suck it. I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Oh, socket. Well, she already called him a sperm sucker, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was her. So, there you have it. I'm about done. I got one more.
I won. You know it. Come on. Say it. Say it. Just say it. I won.
I won.
No! No! Say I won.
I won!
Say it. And the little girl lives.
I'd rather her die than live as your slave.
Yes. Most serious line in the movie, and the only point at which it actually had real gravity that peeked through all the BS in that character, you could tell. So the delivery was perfect.
Yes.
Although
I
he
genuinely
came off,
say that was one of the only parts of the movie that I actually liked.
It was meant to be the redeeming moment, I think, in terms of the final cut anyway.
Yep.
Also was the scene in which Kesley. Also, this Keesley, is the scene in which Malcolm Dowd came off the most cartoonish, pretty sure. Just, man, he did really say it.
Say it. Ah!
Okay.
No! I won.
But he was a cartoon. Especially by that point. Although, the most cartoonish was the bit where they haven't shown him yet, but they turn him around in the big tall chair and he's got the iron fist and he goes, I just wanted to go, Gadget!
Yeah. I'll get you, Gadget. I was like looking for the cat.
Right.
Oh yeah, I got this. Let's do some thumbs up, thumbs down. Get us started, Rich.
All right. Well, thumbs down was not easy for me because I drank all the Kool-Aid in this film. Some of the cut options upset me. There were many points that could have been clearer. I love the movie, but I still lost track of a few points, even having seen it three times. I would love to see this done with the same, we are definitely going there, attitude that's used in Deadpool. But the 90s movie was ahead of its time. Thumbs up, though. so many things, but Laurie's portrayal of a larger-than-life graphic novel character is amazing. I loved everything about her, and I love everything about the film. I'm gonna say, as far as my stars go, I love the mix of animation and faithful live action. The humor is jarring, but well written, and I'm sticking with 5 stars. It's a must-see film.
Nice. All right, Vanessa, what do you got for us? I have a feeling it's going to sound a little different.
It is a very different story than what Rich had.
That's okay, though. That's okay.
I had a hard time finding a thumbs up. My only thumbs up that I could even come up with was that what story was there was interesting. If they had actually put any focus on the story at all, it would have made the movie better. That's the only thumbs up I could come up with. Thumbs down, bad hair, bad makeup, bad costume design, bad transitions between animation and live action. Why would you, Kangaroo Man? Why? There's no explanation on what the actual point to any of that is, and her voice would drive anyone batshit nuts. Overall, my rating is 1.5, and the only reason it got the 0.5 was because of Boogie. Booga. Whatever his name was.
That's everything, I think. I was going to make a comment about how the one answer there is, I think there was a point at which they made a half-assed attempt at explaining the kangaroo thing.
There was a war previous when everything went under, that where everything shifted in power, and one group actually created these as soldiers to fight in the war, and then when they weren't needed, they were discarded.
Like there was a splicing for a reason.
But the creator didn't actually discard them. He secreted them away to the desert.
Right.
Right.
And taught them religion and humanity and freedom.
I gotta wonder, can
we not discuss Johnny Prophet?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I gotta wonder what kind of role he might have played in this with all the stuff that was cut out. Because his only appearance in this movie was as a corpse in a box.
They talked about him three times, and then he was the corpse in the box.
Four times. And animated. They talked about him at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. The Rippers are a mutated by the charismatic Johnny Prophet.
Yeah, and then the reveal when he's there instead of the guns.
Did you read any of the source material on this? I mean, you were talking.
I don't read.
Okay, well, but I walked into that one, didn't I?
But I actually am almost tempted to go ahead and see if I can get a hold of those old comics from 88. But you realize I graduated high school in 88. I mean, that was my zone. The punk rock feel was the thing I grew up on.
I was born in 88, so yeah. That's...
Yeah, I get that. It's a little different.
So it was a very good year. I'm just saying.
I mean, I can't deny it.
Without this show, not just episode, the show wouldn't be as good without 1988. We'll pick more 88 movies, make you feel like you're right at home.
Okay.
Because you were terribly into movies.
Because that's what we need, more Rick Astley in our lives.
We're never going to give you up. Jason?
I am the moderate today. I am super excited. I love it. So, thumbs up. I love Malcolm McDowell. Malcolm McDowell makes every movie at least a 2-star movie. You can take a 0-star nothing, put Malcolm McDowell in it, and it's now 2 stars. That's all there is to it. He's amazing. And I like the Rippers. I could have watched an entire movie of the Rippers. I wish the entire movie was the Rippers, and we could have forgotten a lot of the other stuff. I don't have the same problem with the hair and makeup and stuff because I haven't read the comics, but I saw the comics, and I see what they were getting for. And because I knew it was Australia, and because I knew it was post-apocalyptic Australia, I have in my head the Mad Max and the Thunderdome type. Oh, look, and the Waterworld. You know, that type of post-apocalyptic, we're going to wear leather and spikes and weird things and such. And the fact that most of the people wore clothes was impressive, so they already got a heads up on a lot of the costuming. So, yay for them for mostly having uniforms post-apocalypse. Thumbs down. And this isn't the fault of the movie, this is the source material, but it's still a source. The people in charge of all the water and power were called Water and Power. That's just lazy. And most of the story got left on the cutting room floor. It was weird, it was disjointed, it had really cool elements that weren't connected properly. There were lots and lots and lots of pieces missing to this puzzle, and it made no sense. And then they wondered why it didn't make the money that they thought it was going to make, because they left all of the puzzle pieces that we needed for the show to make sense on the cutting room floor. And probably some that needed to be cut. They probably didn't cut some things that needed to, cut some things that didn't. And it just irritated me, and it was weird, and it was disconcerting. And some things don't age well. And there's a lot of very creepy humor plays. that kind of push it over the line of what is and is not comfortable.
Should we talk about the line?
Lines we did not talk about.
and we're not going to.
Okay. No.
There's sometimes where I can accept humor like that because it seems, for lack of a better word, appropriate to the material. You know, when Marla Singer makes one joke in Fight Club in the middle of a nasty scene, it feels almost appropriate because it's Marla Singer.
Right.
It's Fight Club.
Right. Yeah. I think you're saying.
But when Lori Petty, with her shining blue eyes, goes,
delivers the line
the same way. Almost the exact same joke told with a slightly different twist. It doesn't land the same way because of the atmosphere of the movie and because of the way it's delivered. And it just makes it uncomfortable. And I don't enjoy that at all. And it's not something that I want to ever sit through again. And I'm going to give it a 2.5. 2 stars for Malcolm McDowell, 0.5 star for the Rippers, and the rest of it, I would never recommend this to anyone, ever.
I laughed my ass off at that line. Am I a horrible human being?
Well, I did too.
Was that ever in question?
It's that joke you laugh when you hear, but you can't repeat it, because no matter how you tell it, it will not come off correctly, and you'll sound
that's
like
true.
A weirdo.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you watch the film, you'll know exactly what line we're talking about right now, especially if you've seen Fight Club, to make the cross reference. But it just, I laughed, but then I hated myself for laughing and got really cringy because I laughed. Oh, it's like, oh, no, why? And that's worse. I almost hate it more. I would rather just be so blatantly offended that I'm just, ugh, instead of, oh, so anyway, 2.5 stars. I am not the lowest score this year, this episode.
Da, 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 da. Wow, you are low.
Fireworks.
Kid?
Hi. Got? So this has been fun. I want to say real quick, literally, I walked into this movie after coming straight out of The House with the Clock in the Walls. So I had a different experience because of that than I imagine most of the rest of you did.
I want to see it.
Oh, man. Not going to talk about it.
I read the books when I was little. They're good.
Other than to say it was phenomenal. But once again, I'm going to go into extreme detail events for my thumbs up and thumbs down because they're representative of what I loved and didn't love about the movie. My thumbs down is kind of highlighted by the fact that I was extremely disappointed that after she went through all the trouble to get those wonderful, awesome boots as a gift for her boyfriend, he got shot before we ever got to see him wearing them. And they completely faked us out on that because you right. see the guy walking up in the boots and you're like, it's the boyfriend. And he actually stands there. The guy with the gun stands there while she does the entire scene of snipping
bad guys
to make it funny.
Stockings.
Yeah. I mean, but so, yeah, that was representative throughout the movie. There's little things like that where I was just really disappointed that we didn't
payoff.
Get. Yeah, the payoff.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, my thumbs up was my favorite character in the movie. Hasn't even been mentioned by a single one of you. The tank.
I knew that's where
the movie's called Tank Girl. And nobody even mentioned the tank. The tank was my favorite character in the entire movie. I feel like the tank was that guy. Was the MVC, because the tank, the scene where the tank shakes its head at her, my heart just completely went out to that poor tank. I could totally feel for it. It was like, I want to, but I can't.
That's an impressive barrel.
I loved the tank. The tank absolutely made the movie. 4 stars.
Nice. Well, there you go. Well, where does that put us, Rich?
Well, I don't know. What's your rating?
Oh, did I forget to mention it?
Is it 5?
I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Okay.
I love the movie, but it's not all that.
Is this the first movie where you and I have had the same rating?
I have no idea. Rich could tell. No. He could look it up.
I would be, and I should not be looking at this. Now I am. Yes, it's the first movie where you guys had the same rating.
Have Jason and I ever had the same rating?
Weird.
That'll be the day to really celebrate. Come on.
Anyways. Oh, yeah. He went 5. You went 4. He went 4. You went 5. 4.5 for Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers.
But anyways, on this film with 5 and 4 and 4 and 2.5 and 1.5, we are at 3.5. So it's an okay movie. You might like it if that type of thing, like stuff you like.
And that's fair. My wife actually said that 3.5 was the highest rating this movie deserved. So that's spot on, guys. Way to go.
All right. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. Make sure you check out Priest for our movie on the next follow-up next week we're going to do. We're going to get together and do that one. It is showing online right now and streaming, and we're going to talk about it. Going to go ahead and call it good for today. Thank you so much for joining us. You can join us each week Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock live on Twitch for Richard, for Jason, for Vanessa the Kid. Sayonara.